Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the 2019 Home Education Conference, held in Logan, Utah.
I've done this class in a variety of different ways. And the first time I taught it, it was like, oh, and there's Charlotte Mason and you can do this, and oh, there's TJ Ed and you can do that. And the feedback I kept getting was, but how do you really do it? How do you really do it? And it was always, that's been constantly the feedback every time I've done it philosophically. So I've changed the way I want to do this class. You guys are the experimental group. Because what I want to do is I want to go through like an actual lesson. Like this is how I really teach my, you know, 10 and under kids. And this is how I really teach middle school age. And this is how I really teach high school age. And so we're gonna do three different experiments / projects. And then we're gonna have question and answer at the end. And you guys are gonna actually do them. And they're so fun. Cause I didn't pick the boring ones. And I picked the fun ones. And I've done these, I do these sometimes with just my kids. Like I have a 7-year-old right now, and I have a 13-year-old, and then I have a 16-year-old, and I have two who are in college. And I've done it with the whole family. Most of these will, you know, you can have all of your kids participate. So even though you're kind of gearing it towards your younger kids, like the older kids always jump in. And then sometimes I've done them with like homeschool co-ops. So often science lends itself to finding two or three families. My most successful science co-ops have been like one or two other families so that we can still do experiments, but it keeps me on like a schedule. It's so easy to just be like, oh yeah, we'll do that tomorrow with experiments, versus if your friend's kids are coming over and you're like trading, then you for sure have to have everything out and going. So that's just one of the things that's worked for me. So I've often done it with, you know, like five, six, seven kids, not a huge group, but enough to actually make me, because the other tempting thing is like, I'm sure there's a YouTube video where we can watch what happens. and there's a place for that. So we're starting on the elementary age. This one is, I've used it with Activity Day Girls. I've used it with my own kids. Like we pull it out every now and again. So I need you in about, I don't know, 4 or 5 groups. It almost looks like we can sort of go in quadrants, maybe? I don't know. I've got 5 kits up here. So I need you to organize into 5 groups and come and grab a kit. So you're grabbing both the stuff for the elementary age and the stuff for the middle school age here. And kind of face the people around you and come and grab. So you're grabbing a bag and a thinger, you know, official scientific terminology, the dropper. And the way I introduce this, because this is elementary age, so in elementary age we spend a lot of time going to the library, or sometimes I just order them. We spend a lot of time in books like these where we just read about stuff, and maybe once a week we do something fun. And there's a lot of resources for something fun. There's books like these. We've started using YouTube a lot more, where there's these cool science shows that are like a 15-minute science show, and then it gives them something to go do, and that works really well. So the way I would have introduced it with my elementary age is like, oh, today we're gonna do potions, and this is gonna be so much fun. And then we would experiment, and so I'm gonna let you guys experiment. I'm gonna bring you all the stuff to play with. You're gonna play with it, and then we're gonna talk about why it does that. So I'm now returning the microphone to its stand.
So you're starting with the young first, right? The
youngest. Youngest first. Ironically though, I do use this with my high schoolers because this is a fabulous experiment. So we're going to start, actually, can I have, I need 4 volunteers. So I need somebody to pour this, one of these in everybody's. That one's lemonade, that one's vinegar. And actually we have enough of these
And they just go into one?
Yeah, they go into one. If you'll pour that into everybody's. And I need one more volunteer. Just because you're going to be taking it from the beaker and you're going to be putting it into these. So just, yeah, about half full will be enough for you.
Okay.
You'll put that in there. I was going to do this ahead of time, and I just thought we were going to have a disaster with my car. Just shake some in. And if we make a mess, we'll just clean it up before they know. Not that it's being recorded. So let me get you guys's because nobody's here. And then this is that I'm pouring in that's a little bit stinky is ground up cabbage. And it's just, I took a half a head of purple cabbage. I ran it through the blender. And, ooh, I had better be careful that I don't pour it into one that's already been done. This is purple cabbage in a blender. You can boil it too, but your house really stinks. It goes a little more clear when you boil it, but I was doing this late last night and I thought, I don't want to go to bed to the smell of cabbage. And so now you take your dropper and you add like the things that they're putting, you start adding and you can experiment with this. So, and you let your kids do it. Like don't.
Are the two clear Gatorade bottles different?
So there's one that actually has the label on the Gatorade bottle. That is just water. And I figured that one's just water, so you don't need that one. That one is if you're.
Did everybody get
soda? Yeah, that is. So there, you're very quickly going to realize that when you mix the baking soda one into the vinegar one, you're going to have a reaction. That's like a side effect of this particular experiment, and that's okay. That's fun. Go for it. I just spilled purple cabbage on my toe. That's gross. So go ahead, you have about 5 minutes to play with that. And I know I'm coming as quick as I can though, I'm sorry.
Oh, we're just making sure we know where everything is.
So we need the three liquids. So
three liquids and vinegar. One solid. Yep. So vinegar, lemon juice. As parents, you will recognize that those are acids. Your baking soda and your soap. Wait a second. All right, I've got one more. Somebody want to pour for me? So this one needs to go around. So this is soap.
What kind of soap?
It's, I don't know. That's why I thought I could give it away. I'm like, my neighbor was cleaning out a house and gave me a whole bunch of weird cleaning things.
So it's just cleaning supplies.
It's just a cleaning, yep.
Oh, not soap.
I actually think this is from a dollar store and I've heard it's really good.
Is it?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Can I be helpful?
And I should have put this in two, but I've only got one.
Test tube?
Everybody should have one more test tube that's empty.
Okay.
Everybody should have one more test tube that's empty that they can have soap in. If you don't, I've got... I don't know. If you don't, an empty one. Do you have an empty one? Oh, we filled one with water. Did we fill the water one?
Do you have an empty one?
Yeah, this is the water.
So let's pour the water one back in here and then and replace it with soap.
How many should you have?
Two. So four of them are going to have the purple cabbage. And
we have lemonade. Oh,
okay. So we're going to, this is going to be a little trickier for you guys because these ones are blue and you're not going to see the color change as well.
Okay.
We can use our imaginations.
I think you're going to be fine, actually.
So I guess I don't have an extra.
I forgot there were blue ones in here, so. All right. Well, you know what?
No.
We have four, but it
water,
looks like they're
vinegar.
Only
oh, so the water, pour the water back into hers, and then she's going to give you soap.
Which one's water? Which one's vinegar?
Oh, yeah.
You go by smell. And actually, so when I'm at home, you guys, I use bleach. I actually use some lye.
Yeah.
Because I can control the environment, but much better. And I let the kids pull things out of the fridge. This is like a total play experiment, and they can really try whatever they want. You'll get some funny smells when you mix your acids and bases, but for the most part, they cancel each other. Okay, so there's that. Start putting them in. I just blended it. And then I ran it through a sieve. Yep. So you all have, so you have like a thing and you just take from your miscellaneous liquids and put it in your purple and see what happens.
Do we first mix the baking soda with the vinegar?
Nope.
Before we do that? No.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. So I call it potions, but your purple cabbage is an acid base indicator. And it is going to change color as you add stuff to it. And so, yeah, it's fun. Yeah, so no, don't go from purple to the others. Go from the others to purple. It should go pink as well. You can, actually the kids, so usually, they'll go. So we've gone from one direction to the other direction, and that's, you're perfectly good. So usually by the end of this experiment, you're down to like three full ones because everybody has mixed their stuff all together, and that's okay. So while you're doing that, so one of the things that makes this experiment work so well is my $6 test tube rack and my $6 test tubes. So when you're thinking about worthwhile investments, there's nothing that helps the kids feel more scientific than pulling out some test tubes and a test tube rack.
Can you use these as dyes now? Will they work well as a dye?
You would need to find like a... what do you call it? The mordant or whatever, the thing that needs to hold it. I'm not a dyer, so I don't know. So you would have to read up on that. Yeah. So I put that on there because, especially the little kids, they just love the test tube racks. I got them on Amazon. So I bought them on Amazon, and those were the prices when I made this slideshow. So you could go and get a rack for $6, and you could get test tubes for $6. And if you'll notice, some of you guys, they have like tape on them and Sharpie. My kids have used these for so many things. They've used them for science, for projects. They've used them for all kinds of things. So they get reused all the time. And the stoppers, you can get those at a drugstore. These I actually have for soap making, but those are also worth having. But again, they don't have to have them because you can just pour. Okay, so tell me, what are you guys seeing? So this is how we would do it with the kids. What's happening? Yeah, we're changing colors.
We got some foam over
here. Okay, we got some foam.
Do we have paper?
You know, that would have been very smart of me. And this is why we homeschool, is because then our paper towels are right there. Okay.
I'm trying to hold it. You want to help me, guys? Wait, let's not put any more in just yet. Let's wait till Dad gets.
All right, we're seeing foam. So are you noticing? You're noticing that we're getting a variety of colors, huh? Yeah.
Can we start cross sampling?
For sure. That's why they're foaming over there, and they just went to get napkins. So be careful. So let me go to the next slide, and we're going to talk a little bit about why this happens. So if we had unlimited time, which you would, I mean, no, what am I saying? What mother has unlimited time? That is not true at all. But if you had a little longer, you would let everybody play out to the very end. And the kids will actually, because then they'll start going into the fridge and they'll play this out in about, I don't know, half an hour or so. And then you sit down and you're like, why did it do that? What happened? And you can start talking about how the cabbage water is an acid-base indicator. And then, so what are acids and what are bases? Well, basically water is two molecules of hydrogen and a molecule of oxygen, H2O. And H2O is something people say it all the time, but they don't really think about it. But water actually, when it gets put into other things, splits into OH molecules and H plus molecules. And if you have a lot of H molecule, like a lot of H plus, then you've got a strong acid. Things that are acidic are lemonade, the vinegar, if you have hydrochloric acid. everybody has that in their kitchen. All of those things are strong acids. And the acids, what color did the acids turn?
I don't have a phone.
Okay, so the acids went pink and purple. Oh. So why do you think there's a difference between, why did you go from pink all the way to purple? Like, why was there a variety of difference? What do you guys think?
The degree of acidity.
The degree of acidity. So the more H plus protons, the stronger it is, and the more towards the pink it goes, I believe. I actually probably should have sat down. But the more towards the pink. And versus when you get closer to water, you stay more towards the purple. So if you, so sometimes the kids will pull out like a Capri Sun thinking they're gonna get something really cool, and they don't. They it just barely goes a little pink. And
drink the rest.
Yeah, right. Oh, Mom, we have to try it with ice cream. So the stronger the acid, the more pink it will turn because it's reacting with more of those H's. On the other end of the scale, the more OH negatives it has, that's the stronger the base it is. And so those went to blues and greens. Yeah. A lot of our cleaning supplies, like if you'd done bleach, that would have gotten you a really strong one. So will lye. Lye gets you a really, like that's kind of your ultimate far base one. And so you can talk about like, all right, what things do we have in our house that are acids? What things do we have in our house that are bases? Why do you think that most of our cleaning supplies are bases? Actually, why do you guys think most of our cleaning supplies are bases? Why aren't they acids? It kind of makes sense that it would be an acid, don't you think? But they aren't. They're strong bases.
So it doesn't finish off of like your acid.
Yeah, okay, because sometimes acids will ruin things, but it actually has to do with the reactions, and you can look this up on like YouTube or whatever, because those OHs react with the dirt and fat molecules, that kind of thing, and they'll pull them into these molecules and take them. So often your youngers, they're kind of done once you get the fizz. But then your middle school kids who have been like, how come she gets to do all the fun things? That's when you start saying, and you actually, see, I'm not exactly sure why the bases are better soap, so I probably have Googled that and said, I think it's this, but let's Google it and Google and get the real answer. And then you're fostering like the thinking, you know, you're giving them a little bit of information. And you don't even have to have that ahead of time. Like you really can be like, why does cabbage? Cause you know, Google is so amazing. It gives you so many answers right there at your fingertips. So we got some foam over there, you guys. You guys got things fizzing. I think most of you did. What is that? What's going on with that? Why did it fizz? Who knows that one? Okay, so baking powder and vinegar. So what was baking powder? Was it an acid or a base? It was a base. Vinegar, what was it? An acid. You put them together and they foamed. Why? Yeah. So your OHs and your Hs are going back together, and what do you think they're forming? See how those arrows go both ways? So when you put them back together and you got that foam, you went right back to water. Did it turn purple? Did your foamy one go purplish?
It did.
Yeah. Because you've gone right back to water. So to neutral. So that is, and see how fun that is? And it's easy. you know, you can just pull stuff out. And like I said, once you've done this once, then you're like, I think we can use it in Cub Scouts. I think we can, yeah. So, all right. It's an indicator. So there are certain chemicals, and actually there are, if you type in acid-base indicators, there's quite a few. What's the plant that is like sometimes pink and sometimes purple? That's an acid-base indicator. It changes by the acidity of your soil.
Hydrangeas do that.
Hydrangeas. Those are the ones. They don't grow well in Utah, so. Type in purple cabbage experiment, and you'll get a lot of different things. But I did, it is in your handouts, like the write-ups on it, and a link to the one that I actually like pulled the information from. So that's in the links. I actually gave you a lot of different links. And as you, so when your mind wanders and you guys are kind of bored, you can look up here too. I've thrown up a bunch of books that were very heavy, so I want you to all look at them because I hauled them in today, of like different things we've used all along. Especially when you get to high school, it's kind of nice to know that this book exists, like The Joy of Chemistry. And there's, and I have another one and I didn't bring it, that's like how to set up a chemistry lab in your kitchen, because they get very, very useful later. And books like these, like The Disappearing Spoon, that make chemistry really fun and exciting. I use these for high schoolers. But for younger kids, we spend a lot of time at the library just pulling out and researching. Yes?
You may have said this. Did you have a list of some of these?
No, you're just going to have to take pictures.
Okay.
Because I always hesitate to recommend books. Like, it's one thing for us all to be here and talk about it, but once it's written and then you guys come back to me and you're like, whoa, I did not agree with something in there. And it's like, whoa. And then we have a written record, but here there's no written record. So, and actually talk to me, because one thing you do need to know, and we all know this, our kids are all different and they all take different paths to the same information. And so these are what worked for some of my kids some of the time, and others other times, but not all of the kids all the time. And your kids are different from my kids. So these are just a place to start, especially the textbooks. Like, I really like this biology textbook. When we get to high school, I'm gonna talk a little bit about high school biology, because I found that in the homeschool world, that's a little troubling for people. So I've specifically pulled an experiment. And I hope we've got to move fast through middle school, because I wanted to touch this topic, because everybody's level of what they accept is different. So, all right, moving to middle school. So just set this aside where you're not going to bump it, like tuck it under a chair. We'll gather it later, and pull out your bag that looks like this, because we are going to, gravity already in action. We're going to talk a little bit about Aristotle and Galileo. So Aristotle lived before Christ. He was a philosopher before Christ. And Galileo was a philosopher slash scientist in the Renaissance times, 1500s-ish. Actually, I think my next slide says that so that I don't have to guess. Yeah. And so that really didn't go up as well as I wanted it to, but that's life. So Aristotle was kind of the pinnacle of the Greek and like Greek philosophy. And what happened was the things he wrote down became very, very set in stone during most of the Dark Ages. It was like, he said this and this is what we believe. Well, the ancient Greeks believed that everything was either air, fire, earth, or water, and that things want to get to where they are. And that's why gases try to go up, is because they're air. And that's why rocks try to go down, is because they're earth and they want to get to earth. And that was the prevailing philosophy. So his whole thing on physics was that objects of different mass that are dropped from the same height will reach the ground at the same time, because everything, all earth wants to get to the ground. And Galileo comes along, and you have to understand that, like, Aristotle's philosophies, they're kind of set in stone at this point. Like Galileo's really groundbreaking. And he said, this isn't true. I can do an experiment right now that shows you that that is not true. And so he went up on the Tower of Pisa. Actually, I don't even think he had to get up there for this one. And he drops a feather and a rock. So I want you guys to do that. Nominate somebody. You should all have a feather. One of the feathers was really tiny. So if you don't see a feather, then this one was actually nice and big. I want you to stand up on a chair. Get somebody to stand up on a chair, and I want you to drop a rock and a feather and tell me what happens. Yeah. There was one that was so teeny tiny, I'm like, they're never gonna find this.
No, we got it. We got the little one.
Yes. Here, take that one. All right.
Well, we take a big one, Mama.
Oh, okay.
Can I drop the rock
for me? So stand up, drop them, tell me, do they drop at the same? What happened? Did they go down at the same, or did the feather take longer? Feather took longer. Or actually, you know what? Wait. I mixed this up. See, this is what happens when you don't get enough sleep. So Aristotle was the one who says that the heavier the object is, the faster it will go. Okay, I'm like, this isn't making sense. Like it's been a little while since I've done physics. So you guys actually just proved Aristotle. You proved our ancient philosophers, because he said that the heavier it is, the faster it's going to fall. So that makes sense. So you drop the rock, you drop the feather, and they drop. So her feather's taking forever to go down. So, you know, Aristotle's right, and that was as far as anybody went. Everybody knows feathers take a long time, and rocks drop short. But Galileo came along, and he said that objects of a different mass that are dropped from the same height will reach the ground at the same time. And so what he did is he got a little rock and a big rock. Now, I actually, when I do this at home, I take the screen out of our second story window and we drop really, like, a really big rock and a really small rock. We do not have the privilege of doing that here. So I gave you a smaller rock and a bigger rock, and I want you to drop those from as tall as you can get, stand on a chair, drop them, and tell me what happens. So we're doing a bigger rock, smaller rock.
All right, you want to stand up again?
Bigger rock, smaller rock. You can do it with the ball too. Like, kind of do some experimenting. There it is. Do it with the ball. The ball's going to be a little harder because it's going to bounce all over. We do it with all kinds of different things. I let the kids play with it quite a bit. But what do you eventually find? What's happening? They're hitting at more or less the same time. Yeah. So even though the rock, the little rock, might be 10 times heavier than the feather, that when you do the two rocks, something of similar kind of density, they're going to drop at the same time. So once you kind of play through that experiment with your middle schoolers, and hopefully they've actually read a little something, so this kind of goes with, you've had them read up a little bit about this. I once I hit middle school, I try to find a curriculum. I've used the online textbooks. There's like an online middle school. It's like CK, CK chemistry, CK, or K, yeah, no, it's CK, or K-12. It's not K-12. But I think I put the link in there. If I didn't, then I'll look it up before you leave. But I do something so that they're reading something to give a basis of this, so they're not coming in quite as cold as you are. Or sometimes I do the experiment first and then have them go read. That often works pretty well too. Both work in a different way. But why did, when you first dropped the feather and the rock, why did your feather go down so much slower? Like, why could Aristotle say, hey, I tried this? Yeah.
Wind resistance.
Exactly. So there's a resistance because that weight is spread out. I mean, it's much less, but it's also spread out. So it's hitting all the air molecules all the way down. So many more air molecules than that rock that just barrels through them. And that's why it drops. If you could take that feather and make it into a rock of the same mass, which would be maybe a grain of sand, and drop them, they would come down at the same time. What happens if you move the feather rock experiment to the moon? What happens then?
They hit the ground at the same time.
They hit the ground at the same time. Why?
Because there's no resistance.
Exactly. So this one, you know, the acid base one experiment, that one, like, the kids can go in and they can play with it. This one, you're starting to dive a lot more into concepts. And you have to, as a parent, you have to have read a little up on what's going on. And then your kids are also going to have to read up on it. Because you're moving into high school, where at high school level, they're very definitely, they need to study something. And we tend to do it with a textbook. I like textbooks. But you can do it with like living books, but you need to have some way to get the knowledge in and then play with the knowledge versus playing to get a little tiny bit of knowledge. Now you're trying to cement concepts, and these are important physics concepts. Sometimes when I'm doing it with a group, I ham it up and I bring like a toga and a beret, and we talk about the time periods, and you know, you can really play with it that way. So there he is on the Tower of Pisa. This is laid out really weird because I don't see what's coming. Okay, so now we're going into high school. We have 25 minutes left. Yes. That's an awesome idea. I see, my husband studies bees for a living. He's an entomologist. And so my kids get a lot of biology. They get a lot of biology at the dinner table. They get a lot of biology of like, hey kids, wouldn't you like to spend a weekend helping me with my work? And then we keep bees, you know, and there's a lot with that. But I've had to really struggle to like get the curriculum in. So there's like ambient science that your kids learn. And then there's like, hey, if you want to major in science in college, you need some hardcore science. And so that takes work, and it takes scheduling. I don't stress over it at the early ages, but once they hit ninth grade, we do a science a year. And we've done it in co-ops. We've done it with one other family where we just, like, one family takes the youngers and one takes the olders. We've done it in like a bigger co-op where we had a chemistry class in a community center with like 35 kids, 35 teenagers. That wasn't my favorite. That's really hard, because especially coming from homeschool, because you're coming from all levels. It's a lot easier to find one or two families that are kind of ready to study it on a similar level to yourself. And we've done it with an online school. My second son did a high school anatomy class because there was just no way that I could teach him anatomy. And so we do it. There's so many different paths. So for our high school one, you guys don't have any more supplies for this. We're going to do it all together. So we're going to pick like four, everybody nominate one person from their group to come to the middle, and we're going to run this simulation. It's a fun one, and it has to do with natural selection. So I'm going to give you some information ahead of time. So natural selection is Darwin's philosophy, Darwin's hypothesis, and it's a very core hypothesis to biology that we call it survival of the fittest, but it's that everybody's born with various traits, and some are going to help you survive better than others. And those that survive better will pass it on to their children. And over long periods of time, things will evolve and change. And this is you can't study biology without natural selection, because it influences all the variety of animals, all the variety of plants, everything on this earth. Now, Darwin is a lightning rod for people within various philosophical groups. I don't want to get to that. What I do want to say is that Heavenly Father created the earth. This we do know. And He loves us and He loves every creature. And it would make sense that He would create a mechanism for change within the earth. He is not a micromanager. He is a delegator. And so He's going to put processes in place for us to become better, for creatures to adapt, for things to move, for global warming to change a climate, and then those creatures to survive. The earth, we know, it's gone from cold to hot to cold. It's gone from wet to dry, and every living creature needs a way to continue with that. Heavenly Father created the earth in a way. We don't necessarily know what that way is, but He did it somehow. And so I am never threatened with new ideas. Those ideas may get discarded. I may look at them and say, whatever, I don't believe it. But we're allowed to have new ideas because we're trying to figure out how He did it. And it's very, very important that we bear our testimony of these things to our children. Because when we say something in science is bad, or something in science is, you know, I just don't agree with that and we're not going to study it, and yet it's a core philosophy within an entire branch of science, we are putting our children at a severe disadvantage when they start college. Because they go in to BYU, very first day, they sit down, and the professor starts talking about Darwin, and they're like, I don't believe it. My mom told me that's wrong. And it is a crisis of faith. And we can sit back and say, oh no, that'll never happen. It happens all the time. So we need to give our kids tools to question and ask Heavenly Father, because they are going to bump into this. And so a lot of homeschool curriculums and Christian curriculums take natural selection out, and they will quote like a few studies, and I think that's a real disadvantage to our children. So I'm now stepping off the platform. But this is just one of those things that I feel so passionately about. And so I use standard high school curriculum rather than a Christian curriculum. I have used Christian curriculums and I really like them, but I make sure, especially at the middle school age, I like them a lot. I make sure that I always let my kids be open to new ideas. And I try really hard not to close them down. Okay, so I need one person now. So now we're gonna do an experiment on natural selection. And I very purposely picked it because natural selection is so cool. And you really do it in the very beginning of biology because it affects cells. You know, why are some cells here and some aren't? Why do we have antibiotic resistance? Why are there so many different flowers, et cetera? So one person into the middle. Come on, somebody's got to do it. I know, everybody's like, oh, not me. I don't want to do me. Or actually, no, it's the opposite. They're all like, me, 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 I want to do this. All right, I'm going to put this. The recording for this class is going to be weird because they're going to be like, she just stopped talking in the middle. Oh, and I think there's people in the mother's room. I'll try to talk loud. All right. This is a recorder, and that is going to the mother's room. I didn't think of them. I sometimes have this sort of jaded philosophy on the recordings because I think, you know, we're here, so we should be able to, yeah, move around. All right, so here's what we're going to do. We are going to have two different habitats. We're going to start with this one. And what we would do, if you guys have your books open, you can follow along with what I'm doing. So it's in the high school natural selection one. So you're going to, what we basically need, start with like 10 black pom-poms. And so when I do this and I want to spend like an hour, we might go with different sizes, but let's go with similar sizes. Let's go with 10 white, and let's go with 10 red. And try and pick kind of similar sizes. If you can't, then you can't. Then you've got a sport, and that's okay. We're gonna have three. You know what? This would work better if I have two more people. Two more. Okay. Oh, we're gonna get all the kids. Yay! Come on up, you guys. We'll take them.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, come on up. Because what we're gonna do is, once you've got 10 of each, throw them on the black and then do it again for the red. So there will be 10 black on the red, 10 black on the black. And just throw them in kind of they need to be interspersed. Yeah. Oh, wow, that red, like, I didn't think about matching my reds. So this is gonna be interesting. Okay, and then, so now do 10 red here, and yep, white. So we need 10 white, 10 red, 10 black on here. 10 white, 10 red, 10 black on there. Yep. For those of you in the mother's lounge, I know the camera doesn't move. We have fabric on the floor that we've got, like, black fur and we've got red velvet, and we are putting 10 of each color, and then we're gonna have three predators on each one, and each one's gonna have a different, they're either gonna have a fork, a knife, or a spoon, and we're gonna time them for 10 seconds. So this needs to go this direction just a little bit, because you're gonna wanna get around it. All right, I need three on there, and you each get, all right, you get to be a fork. Are you on this one?
Yes.
You can be a fork too. Take one of these. You get to be a spoon.
Okay.
Top of the food chain. You get to be a spoon. So we have them on all of them. All right, you guys are knives. Let me grab you your knives. So we're gonna record you, or we're gonna time you for 10 seconds. And you can use one hand and the utensil. One hand and the utensil. So, yes, you're there. All right, I need one of you over here, one of your knife people over here. So you guys can, you can't scoop it into your cup. You have to get it up and into your cup. That's one of the rules. And you have 10 seconds to get as many as you can.
Of the same color?
Of any of them. Any of them you want. Get whatever ones you want. And yeah, you can get down on your knees though. You don't have to do it from up above. And let me pull out my phone. We have 15 minutes. We'll get through this. We're doing good on time. All right. I'm doing a 10 second timer. When you hear the timer buzz, you have to put everything down and then we're gonna count up. Ready? Set, go. Stop. Okay, ooh, our knives did not do well. Wow. Okay, so we would have either a whiteboard or a piece of paper, but we don't have a whiteboard here. So I'm just not going to worry about it. It's okay. Yeah, this is kind of for fun. If we were at home, though, we would for sure write things. Okay, who were our successful predators?
She's a good predator right there.
Okay. There's a whiteboard right there. Oh, hey. All right, so in our, here we go, black and red. And we started with, so black, red, white. We started with 10, 10, 10. Black, red, white. Started with 10, 10, 10. Okay, I want you guys to count up how many, so keep yours out. How many are left in the thing? How many in the black fur, what's left? Three black, how many red?
One.
One red,
one white.
One white. Okay, actually I'm gonna put it here. 3, 1, 1. All right. Who? So you've got an advantage here to being black. Now, for every one that's left, you throw two more in of the same color. So you can throw in two whites, two reds, and six more blacks. All right, so on the red, two for each that are left. Okay, tell me how many are left on the red fur of each thing. How many black pom-poms were left?
Seven
red. Seven red. Okay, how many white?
And
six white. Okay, for every one of those that survived, you can put two in. So hopefully we have enough. So you can put in 14 black.
Put two in. Say that again. Put two from our cups into the...
From the cup or the bag. Or the bag. For everyone. And you can use their... So theirs that are in the feeding can go over to...
Yeah.
So you need... Wow. The red habitat is looking pretty good for predators. Okay, and then yeah. Okay, and then while they're doing that for you guys, those only the top half of the predators survive. So we'll go with like the top two. So one's gonna get taken out of the thing each time. So that's okay. You're gonna get reborn in whoever was the top one. So the knife did not do so well. Knives were not adapted to this particular habitat. And so you get reborn as, it looks like the spoon one. I'm gonna give you a spoon because you are now the spoon's daughter. Yes. Yeah. 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 The spoon's the top of the food chain here. Top of the food chain. And you can, you know, if you need, you can go with like. Yeah. See, so when you do this with, like, sometimes you've got a small group, but it works to have, you know, about three people in each group, and you'll kind of run your own simulations. You guys can sort of see where this is going. We'll run it one more time. But you can talk about natural selection with it, but you can also talk about ecology. You can look up like the elk in Yellowstone and the wolves and how, you know, if you've got a top predator, it can sometimes help other species flourish. You can pull in almost any of those ideas as you're doing this. Okay, so sprinkle your food around, like all your different colors, because if they clump like that, that's really gonna give your spoons an advantage. So I would go to the edges, all of you guys, like
maybe
you guys.
You have to do one at a time.
No, you don't. You don't have to do one at a time. I don't think that's one of the rules.
Be wanting fighting chance. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. No, the only rule, but what you may find is that your predators are too successful. They may, after this, not have anything left to eat. So, no, but that's still a valid ecology. And that's why it's kind of nice to run multiples, is because... You'll see, like, the fur really does well to hide the black, but we're only gonna go 5 seconds though, because we're gonna extinct this entire ecosystem. All right, are you guys ready? Oh wait, we need to. The knife was reborn. Was the spoon most successful or the fork? The spoon was okay.
Oh, thank you.
And those ones. So actually. Actually, take your cups now and dump them so that you start out empty. Yeah. Yeah.
Dump them out.
All right. We're only going to give you 5 seconds here. And this is...
Dump them on your thing?
No.
No, no.
Over here, because we don't want
this is... Tweak. So that your timing, you kind of tweak. Like, you look at this and you go, oh, well, I know it said 30 seconds, but we'll have no ecosystem. So we're going to go to 5. Ready, set, go. Okay, even 5 seconds was too much. All right, this is an interesting ecosystem, isn't it? So one of the things, like had we tweaked our numbers, like we might have even started over, because what we would want to find is that the black survive a little better. We had more black, but we've eaten out the entire ecosystem. We have now decimated. And then you can go and you can talk about, what's happening? You know, what things are extinct? What made them extinct? What is a species that's causing these problems? How can we be stewards? How can we, when Heavenly Father tells us to multiply and replenish, what are we doing to replenish? Like, so you could go there with this because you've extincted out an entire, you mean predators. So we would put zero, you know, we would have put the original numbers on there. How did you guys do? What happened over here?
We only got five.
Okay, wait. So tell me, okay, wait, who was your, so it still was the spoons?
Yes.
Oh, well, your fork
well,
is,
worked it pretty well, actually.
You know what? There, you can often have two predators in an ecosystem, and you guys would probably just go back and forth because that spoon would die but come back as a spoon, right? Oh, no, it would come back as a fork because you have more.
Okay.
So the fork has more. So our spoon would have died, come back as a fork. And this is showing how in ecology you often have, you know, predators that go back and forth. See how we're tying in all these principles? The other one that you would really want to pull out, like on the black fur, if we had tweaked our numbers right, we would have more, by the end it would only be black because all the red and white would go and you would hopefully have your black. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And you guys, yours, because the red don't blend well, it's not helping at all. I should have looked better at what color my pom-poms were. Because you want to see that the blending sometimes helps. It's the adaptation, yep. And so like the furrier, you really want to, when you run it, the nubbier it is, the better, because it really does give them a survival thing. And the other thing you can do is you can sometimes put these ecosystems together, run the thing together, and see how at the end you've got more of one color on one side and one on the other. You know, you can play with it a lot that way.
This same idea works really well with colored toothpicks in the grass, where it's not as easy to...
Yes, that's a great idea. I haven't actually heard of that, but I like it. Okay. All right, so they're starting to clean up. This is, you know, these are the kinds of... So this just helps you visualize a little. What natural selection would be. There's a lot of different ways to do it. Because the whole, and then you talk about the moths and how the white moths survive better in the cities and the black ones in the forest because they blend better. It's those kinds of things that you do. So are there any questions? Like I just took you through a lot of stages. Not every science lesson is a fun simulation and not every science experiment works. But it's fun to jump in and then use the mistakes and other things. Nothing was perfect. Nothing that we did today was perfect. And almost everything, like I pulled out, I actually meant to put kits together for everybody and blah, 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 but I didn't have time. And moms don't have time. Mm-hmm. And so don't let that discourage you from doing, yeah. Like tell your kids, okay, I'm willing to do science. Give me 10 minutes. Like I use this with my daughter all the time. Give me 10 minutes. Okay. And then I pull, you know, like I'll Google it even. Sometimes I have nothing. Like she's at the 7-year-old stage. When they're older, you know, they go with their lessons. She's at the 7-year-old stage where she's like, oh, mom, how come I can't do science today? And it's like, who says you can't? We homeschool. And why don't you watch this educational video right now? And I gather something. Because we can do a lot just with the stuff in our kitchen. And we can do, you know, if we think about it ahead, we can gather some supplies at the weekly shopping. You know, when we run to Walmart, we grab some pom-poms. And then we pull it together. And I want you to know it's very doable. Like, all these things are really doable. So, any other questions or suggestions or comments?
You said this was high school, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I run this with high school. I actually do it with the younger kids sometimes, but the concepts are high school concepts. So, anything else? Okay, thank you. Come look at my books. Take pictures of them so that you know things. Thanks.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.